Man, it feels good to be back. This is Derek joining me as always, Greg Smith. Greg, Fuse is back.
It's back. We are back with Fuse. I'm very happy that we're doing this again.
Yeah, we had a nice winter break, I guess you could call it. We had like a month off, but happy to be back podcasting with you. I'm happy to finally get to use this new mic that we have. It's going to be fun. Happy to be talking about the 2018 Huskers. As it's starting to take shape, this is going to be a fun season.
Have we officially turned the page now that everything is kind of, the season is done? Well, Nebraska season's been done for a while, but we won't talk about that. The national championship's out of the way. Bama's on top again. We've turned the page. We can now look forward.
I think people turned the page like a month ago.
Probably.
I think you asked this on Twitter. I wonder how many people that said that they weren't going to watch the national championship actually watched it. I didn't have any interest in watching it, and I watched every second of it.
Right. That was my entire point, was I felt like a lot of people would say that they weren't going to watch it. And then when it came down to it, it wasn't necessarily that you really wanted to see Alabama or that you really wanted to see Georgia or you cared about SEC football. It was the last football game.
Yeah, it was football.
And then it turned out to be really good football, especially in the second half, and was compelling with all the true freshmen, though that's not good for the prospects of taking down Alabama in the future, but we won't talk about that. But it was good football, so you know, you got to enjoy it while it's here.
It was funny that going into it, everybody that had Georgia, like you and I had talked about it, and we were like, this is the beginning of the Georgia dynasty, right, and maybe the tail end of the Alabama dynasty. And Nick Saban at halftime is like, nope, screw you guys, I'm putting in a true freshman, and you're going to have to deal with this for four more years.
Absolutely insane that a true freshman quarterback, running back, left tackle, and two true freshman wide receivers led the charge in that comeback for Alabama.
That's insane.
In addition to a couple of young players on that defense. Like, it's really crazy what they've been able to do, but I think they've had like six straight number one recruiting classes. Those are the types of things that you can do.
We're going to stop talking about Alabama so people will continue to listen. So how it's going to work from here on out, since we don't technically have any football games, therefore we don't have any views from the other side to go get, Greg and I are going to spend the next 4 weeks breaking down position groups on this team. We're going to start this week with a preview of quarterbacks and pass catchers. Next week, we will move to safeties and corners. That's going to be fun. The week after, we'll talk running backs and the offensive line. And then we will wrap it up with linebackers and the defensive line. And that should put us on track to talk about the Big Ten tournament when things wrap up. We'll talk basketball then. You ready to get going?
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
All right. My first question to you, and it has nothing to do with football, but I feel compelled to ask you this question.
Okay.
What do you make of this whole LeVar Ball, Luke Walton, coaches, media situation?
If you don't know, I'm a diehard Lakers fan,
yeah.
So I have strong thoughts on this. I think that LeVar does need to tone it down a little bit, only in the way that he's got to stop criticizing publicly the coach and the organization. That does create some issues, particularly for his son, who has to work there and be there every day, while LeVar is overseas with his other sons. But at the same time, I really vehemently disagree with other coaches around the league, both sticking up for Luke Walton. That's weird. Like, you don't see that. And like, why do you guys care what's going on with the Lakers? And B, I really disagree with them saying that people need to be banned if they talk to LeVar Ball. Like, the whole thing became really strange to me, and I don't understand how we got to where, you know, Rick Carlisle has taken a lot of the brunt of this, but Stan Van Gundy also said similar things about banning people that want to talk to LeVar Ball and this, that. So that's weird, but he does need to chill. Like, it can be both. It can be both that LeVar is in the wrong and that these guys are also in the wrong for saying that there needs to be a ban. Dick Vitale can also get a little heat here too, talking about LeVar is the worst ever and he's hurting people. Stop it. You make your money exploiting college kids. So we gotta stop that, and that stuff's a little too far, but he does need to chill.
Stan Van Gundy's a weird guy to be a flag bearer for this. I wonder what media scrums at Lakers practice looks like compared to media scrums at Detroit Pistons practice.
Probably quite a bit different.
Might have like four guys there.
Yeah.
I think it's weird. The only issue that I have is like coaches saying we are above criticism. Like, it was weird because in the memo that the NBCA sent and Rick Carlisle said, just talking about how, like, they have this role with the media, or they have this like bond with the media and ESPN in particular, and they shouldn't be criticizing them. And it's like, we're getting into a very tricky situation when you're like, you don't get to criticize us. Like, because if you're doing something stupid, they're absolutely going to criticize you. I agreed with some points. ESPN had the resources to get like a Laker official in that story or a Laker player in that story saying like, you know, LeVar is just dumb and doesn't know anything. But I mean, it's just, it's weird.
But also the I'm glad you brought up the partnership with ESPN and the NBA and that whole angle, because that gets to be a real tricky slope. So not just the fact of banning guys that talk and are critical, because where do you stop with that? So now let's say I covered the Lakers and I went on a sports talk show in which they had been critical of the Lakers and Luke Walton. Should I then be banned because they were critical of him? Also, if you start to talk about ESPN having favorable coverage for coaches in the league, like, are they really actually journalists anymore? Or are they just PR? Yeah. Like, that becomes a really weird situation. And it's come up a little bit before, particularly with the NFL and ESPN. Like, when you talk about the concussion stuff and all of that. But this is really weird territory for all that.
It has the potential to be kind of a big story, one that lasts a while, which is weird.
It didn't have to be.
LeVar Ball is winning everything because he continues to get talked
about. Hey, he's got his logo on the court in Lithuania, man.
The referees are wearing BBB stuff.
Big baller brand.
from one coach who's getting that criticism, whether it was deserved or not, in Luke Walton, to another who hasn't really done anything worthy of criticism yet, Scott Frost. Last time we were podcasting, it was before the early signing period. It's been a month on the recruiting trail for the staff, and they've really been everywhere and been pretty successful. Just overall, what are your kind of top-down observations on how this last month has gone on the recruiting trail?
I've been really impressed with their organizational skills, being able to multitask, because they did pull all of that off while putting together a game plan to beat Auburn and to be successful in that Peach Bowl and still keep the attention and respect of their now former team, current team then, down at UCF in Orlando. So I've just been impressed with, and just the dedication and hard work. Like, it would have been really easy for this staff to not have gone to the lengths that they did to recruit some of these players. Like, I feel like, you know, 5-10 years from now, we're going to still be telling the story of Scott Frost flying across the country to recruit Adrian Martinez, or all of the jokes about Ryan Held must have a cutout that he sends around to these other schools. Because, like,
I thought he just had a twin.
Right, because they've been putting in an incredible amount of work. I don't expect any of that to slow down, but they did a great job with that. And, oh, by the way, they picked up some really quality football players along the way, that and a handful of them that can help this team immediately.
Yeah, I think the point that you brought up about Adrian is the most important one. That's a position that's going to get talked about the most, going to get the most buzz in the run-up to the season. Him flying from Florida to California and then back and then to Nebraska and all the trips that he made, I mean, that was incredible. And for them to land him, I think it's really important. Tanner Lee's off to the draft. It's guaranteed that Nebraska will start a quarterback next season that doesn't have any career starts at the FBS level. It might be a freshman. I wrote a few weeks ago that just because Adrian was the best fit doesn't necessarily mean that he will get the start right away. But that was before Tanner announced that he was going to the NFL. What are your thoughts on Adrian and on his chances of starting from day one?
So I'm very high on Adrian Martinez, the prospect. I think that he's going to be a good college quarterback, and he is a great fit for this offense. I struggle with, whether or not I think he's going to be able to make that transition right away, not just because of rehabbing from the shoulder injury and knocking off the rust, but just adjusting to the college game and being able to pick up Big Ten level competition, be able to play right away. That's going to be difficult, but I also, there's part of me that wants them to just kind of rip the Band-Aid off and go straight to him. You take your lumps in year one if you have to, and then you'll be better for it down the road. But it is much easier for me to say that, not coaching the team and not having it be my job, than it is for Scott Frost and his staff. But if anybody could do it right now, it would be Scott Frost. If Scott Frost said tomorrow that he wanted Adrian Martinez to start and he knows that you guys got to be patient, people would say, okay, he's got that ability. I just don't think that he's wired like that to look at it from that point of view necessarily.
Yeah, I think it's weird. The one thing that I, like, myself in particular always forgets is that he's coming off a shoulder injury.
Yeah.
Like, he looked good in the All-American game, but he's coming off a shoulder injury. I mean, so in looking at that, they have offered other quarterbacks too. Mm-hmm. Are they done adding quarterbacks?
No, I don't believe that they're done adding quarterbacks. And mostly, that's not necessarily an indictment on Martinez or his rehab with the shoulder or anything like that. He's checked out 100%. He's cleared. He obviously, like I said, played in that Under Armour game. But they want to add another quarterback because right now they only have three scholarship quarterbacks on the roster. They got Adrian Martinez, who we've been talking about. They have redshirt freshman Tristan Jebbia, and they'll have redshirt sophomore Patrick O'Brien. And that's it for scholarship guys.
And I feel like he's a flight risk.
And I agree that he's also that he's a flight risk. So you most coaches don't like carrying just three scholarship quarterbacks. Mike Riley and Danny Langsdorf felt the opposite. That was their philosophy, to keep that quarterback room small. You've already seen Nebraska add a transfer in Noah Vedral from UCF coming back home to play. So they definitely want to add bodies to that room. He won't be eligible this year, but they want to add bodies. Yes, but they want to add bodies and see where it goes. But I definitely think they take a second quarterback who they may or may not be able to then move down the road if things don't work out for them at quarterback.
Yeah, and you mentioned this, the last staff didn't like having a big quarterback room. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's necessarily an issue, especially with a guy like Scott who played in the years of Nebraska when they had the walk-on program. Yep. At the height of it, and all of the players that Tom Osborne was managing. I think he knows what he's doing, and I think he'll be fine there.
He wants to do that.
Yeah,
exactly. What he wants to increase the number, actually, of guys on the roster.
Do you think either Jebbia, I mean, we touched on this already, but do you think Jebbia or POB transfers? I don't think POB has any shot. When I watch him, there's just not really a wow factor, and I hate saying that about the kid because he seems like he's been a good kid, but I just find myself going, eh, when I watch him. Do you think either of them transfers?
I do think that one of them transfers. If I had to pick one, I would pick POB as well. But the one word of caution I would give on that is that I know that this staff does not plan to watch any film on what happened previously with these kids that they're inheriting. I think that's actually a benefit to Patrick O'Brien. Not necessarily that he has a lot of film to go on anyway, but because they'll start with a blank slate, maybe he gets an opportunity to really show what he can do. I just don't love the fit for him in this offense. And it's not just his running ability, it's the decision-making. Where the leg up big time to me for Tristan Jebbia over Patrick O'Brien to the guys that are already on the roster is that Jebbia is a much quicker decision-maker and is a much more accurate quarterback as well. Both of those traits are at a premium in Scott Frost offense.
Yeah, and both of those bode well, or both of those come with experience too.
Right.
So I would not be surprised at all if Jebbia is the guy come spring. Okay, let's talk about the guys that are going to be catching the ball, because there are some good ones returning, and JD and Stan's coming back, and then they've got some interesting pieces coming in now, and a couple of JUCO talents. This group needed depth. They needed more bodies. They seem to be getting it. How do you feel about that room now compared to how you felt about it maybe a month ago?
That's a good question, because I feel so much better about it now than I did a month ago. I was very nervous about the wide receiver position on this team when Scott Frost got the job for two reasons. One, they didn't have any wide receiver commits at that point because they had lost Joshua Moore and had lost guys before that. So you didn't have guys coming in. And at that point, we kind of thought that Stanley might be a guy that could go to the draft. It was very plausible that he would do that. We saw that he's coming back, but that was a tough decision. You didn't know about Tyjon. You didn't know about JD as well. You didn't know about Kian Williams as well. His dad just lost his job. You don't know what's going on there. So who would have been in that room? Right now, it looks like those guys will all stay, and they've added some quality guys. Like you mentioned, the JUCO guys, Jerron Woodyard, Mike Williams, both guys who I think will play right away, especially Woodyard. I think will have a big role on this team right away. But now they have the makings of a pretty good group, and you know that this offense at times will run five receivers out there. If they're going to do that, they need bodies in depth, and quality bodies in depth, and they needed more speed, and they got that.
Did you what was your reaction when you saw Stanley's GIF when it rolled across your timeline of I'm coming back?
I had to try to figure out what scene that was in that movie. Like, if we're being totally honest, I didn't get it right away. So I had to go look that up. And then I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, his GIF game is pretty good. And then it was funny to see all of the Husker fan reactions, and they were sending him their own, and that was really fun. But it had to pretty much sums up Stanley's personality as well.
I had to explain to my dad what that was. And when I did, he got really excited.
Nice.
I think that he's a big, I mean, he was a big stabilizing force for this
room. That's a
great
way to put it.
Because, like you said, it looked like they were going to lose a bunch of guys. Mm-hmm. And then Stanley comes back, and now they've added guys.
Yep.
And it looks like it's going to be really good. You've got Mike Williams and Woodyard from the JUCO ranks, like you've touched on already. You've got McGriff. You've got Legrone, who could play a little bit at wide receiver, maybe. Who do you think makes the biggest impact first? I really like the prospects of Woodyard in this offense, especially sandwiched in between Spielman and Morgan. I think he's got the potential to do some really good things, and he's like crazy fast.
Yes, he is. I'll give you two names because there's one that we haven't actually really mentioned yet. One, Jerron Woodyard, I do agree with you, is going to be the like complete newcomer that makes the biggest impact and have the best opportunity right away, already on campus and enrolled in classes. I think that he'll be a guy that gets a lot of touches or a lot of looks. Tyjon Lindsey is a guy that we've not really hit on yet, a guy that's already on the roster. We were waiting. We wanted last year for him to be further along in his development. I'm curious to see if that issue was because of him and his development, or did Riley Langsdorf not have a good enough plan for getting him involved right away? We see all over the country where true freshmen come in. We talked about it at the top of the show. Come in and have a plan, and they do well right away, utilizing the talents that got them to that spot, right? I think that he's a great fit in this offense and could be a breakout player that we're not thinking about, along with Javon McQuitty if he ends up being healthy.
I like McQuitty. He's been putting out some rehab videos and some updates of him, and I think he's a guy that's not getting talked about enough, probably because of the injury, and there's nothing to look at when it comes to him, nothing in game film to look at when it comes to him, but I think he's exciting.
It's funny that you mentioned that, you know, he basically gets overlooked all the time because it happened when he was being recruited because he was in that class with Tyjon and with Keyshawn. So he wasn't ever talked about. And now, you know, we're going through that same thing again.
And I think it's funny that you think that Tyjon maybe might not have been utilized properly, because it's not like there's not history to back that up. We saw that all over the board last year with guys coming in. Do you think Spielman goes outside and plays on the edge, or do you think they keep him in slot?
I could see them mixing it up. That's kind of a cop-out answer, but I think that he would be a guy that can move all over the place. But I would not be surprised if he played more on the outside, because I do think that he has the ability to do that, especially as he gets more and more comfortable playing that wide receiver position.
Okay. Let's play a little over-under.
Okay.
1,000-yard receiver next year. Stanley's coming back. They're going to have JD. Do they get a 1,000-yard receiver?
No, I'm going to say that they don't. So under on that, because I think they'll spread the ball out more.
Does Stanley get close to the record again? I mean, what did he finish with? 940 something last year?
948, if I remember right. I think he'll lead the team in receiving. I think he'll be about that same, in that same range, but I don't think that he's going to get to 1,000 yards.
I think they could have a couple 700 or 800 yard guys and maybe a 400 yard guy. But that would require a lot of talent or a lot of production out of your quarterback spot. Okay, so the next one. One quarterback for the Huskers starts 11 games, meaning that Frost picks a guy and he sticks with that guy for most of the season. You're going to go over or under?
I'm going to go under. Okay. On that one, because right now, and as you're asking me, I would say that Tristan Jebbia is the guy, but then Adrian Martinez ends up kind of supplanting him as we go throughout the season.
Okay.
That's a tough one, though, but I would go on.
Well, and there's history to back that up, because McKenzie Milton at Central Florida, he didn't start right away.
Right.
It was a junior or senior that they had on roster before Scott got there that started the first two or three games and then struggled, and then it was Milton's turn to take over. So kind of the next one, first year passing in Frost offense at Central Florida with Milton and with the other guy, I'm blanking on his name, and they had about 2,600 yards through the air. Over-under on the Huskers hitting that mark, 2,600 yards passing in this first year.
Under.
Okay.
I'm going to go under, but I think the rushing yards go up. I think that that to me is going to be one of the exciting things about this offense, is because of the space that it creates with the sets. Greg Austin, you know, kind of whipping that offensive line into shape, adding some bodies to the running back room. I think that that part of the game will be better, and they won't need to have as much passing to be successful as they bring a quarterback along. Because either way, they've got to bring a quarterback along here that hasn't played at this level.
Yeah, right. And when you look at last year, they were more lethal through the air than they were on the ground.
Sure.
I think it wouldn't shock me to see that reversed a little bit this upcoming season just because of the talent that they've got in the backfield. Do you think that's fair to say?
I do think that's fair to say. And it, I also think it's fair to think that that will flip back, though, once whichever quarterback it is gets comfortable. I could see either Jebbia or Martinez being big time in the future and that flipping back around.
Right. That might just be a stylistic tweak out of necessity. I really want to ask over-under if Martinez doesn't start. I really want to ask over-under on how many games do you think it takes for people to start calling for Martinez?
The spring game. there'll be a lot of excitement for him, but I think that people will get reacquainted with Tristan Jebbia and what was the excitement for him last year. Don't forget, people, and you and I were both very high on him and his talent last year. Yeah. I remember when we first saw him, you looked at me and it's like, that guy's really good. He's small, but he's really good. And I think people will get reacquainted with that and be really excited for Jebbia.
I have this weird thing with Jebbia where every time I think about him, I think about this really, really small guy, like 6 foot or under, and then I see him on a field. I think it's mostly because I always see him standing next to Patrick O'Brien,
right?
Or like I see his listing on the roster on the website, and it's like 6'3", and I'm like, really? He's that tall? But he is.
Yeah, he's a true 6'3". I mean, it feels like every time we see him, he's gained weight.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be curious to see what he looks like physically when the next time that we get to see him as well.
Yeah, because Zach Duvall is the strength coach. That was a big get. That was a big, big get for the staff. I'm curious what they look like when they come back after spring and summer workouts. Do you have any hypotheticals that you want to throw out there, or should we just end with three?
No, we can end with three. That's fine.
Okay. That's going to wrap it up for this week. Remember, next week we're talking safeties and corners. That will be interesting. Greg dropped some nuggets on recruiting earlier this morning. Jacob has an update on Nebraska Ball's Jordy Shimanga. There's plenty of stuff for you guys to go read over on HailVarsity.com if you are like me and don't go anywhere on your Friday nights. As always, I'm Derek. That's Greg. This is Views, and we will be back next week.